Pompeii, portent of disaster. The people of Pompeii were quite unprepared for the eruption of Vesuvius, getting on with their busy lives in total ignorance of what was to come. The signs of impending disaster, though, were there. Why did no one pick up on them? The unexpected catastrophe. It is certain that when the eruption of Vesuvius started on the morning of 24 August AD 79, it caught the local population utterly unprepared. Although at the same time, as we know in retrospect, all the telltale signs were there to warn them. It is mainly thanks to the vivid eyewitness accounts of the younger Pliny, a Roman administrator and poet whose many vivid letters have been preserved, that we have some understanding of what happened. And it is through him that we can gain insight into the reactions and feelings of the people caught up in the drama of this natural catastrophe. Pliny's account leaves no doubt that everyone was caught unprepared. His uncle, known as Pliny the Elder, was stationed in command of the Imperial Navy base at Misenum on the northwest extremity of the Bay of Naples. He was not only the senior military officer in the district, but possibly the most well-informed living Roman on matters of natural science. His 37-volume Natural History is the longest work on science in Latin that has survived from antiquity. But for all his science and his seniority, his nephew tells us that the elder Pliny was relaxing after a bath and lunch when Vesuvius started to erupt, and the sighting of a column of smoke, like an umbrella pine on the far side of the bay, triggered a response more of curiosity than of alarm to him. He and his companions were evidently not anticipating such an event. The same account reveals, however, that the signs were there. Pliny's casual reference to earth tremors, which not particularly alarming because they are frequent in Campania, reveals the Romans' comprehensive ignorance of the link between seismic activity, earth tremors, and volcanic activity. The volcanologists of today constantly monitor any changes in levels of seismic activity from the observatory on Vesuvius because they know that the same increase of activity in the deep reservoir of magma, molten or partially molten rock beneath the Earth's surface, causes both earth tremors and volcanic eruptions. Through measuring seismic activity, these scientists expect to predict an approaching eruption months in advance. They also know that the activity of the Vesuvius is recurrent, and that the longer the intervals between one eruption and another, the greater the eventual explosion will be. The frequent but low-level activity of Vesuvius in recent centuries has relieved the buildup of pressure in the magma chamber. The catastrophic magnitude of the eruption of AD 79 was connected with the expanded period of inactivity that preceded it. A long interval combined with mounting seismic activity is a sure sign of impending disaster. Of course, the Romans could not know this, and our own knowledge owes much to the care of Pliny's description. The long inactivity of the volcano naturally lulled the people of the region into a false sense of security, though they were aware of the signs of burning at the peak of the mountain. They were not the first to be so lulled. Recent excavations at the site of the new NATO base in Griscanio on the north end of the bay have revealed two catastrophic eruptions that preceded that of 79 and wiped out populations of a densely occupied territory. The most important earlier eruption, known as that of the Avellino Pumice, occurred around 1800 BC. Several sites, especially one near Nola, revealed the destruction of the Bronze Age settlements and their huts, pots, and pans, and livestock. But of this, the Romans knew nothing. Signs and portents. The irony of this is that the Romans were extremely interested in predicting the future, and they had a range of ways to detect what they saw as the approaching wrath of the gods. They were adept, for example, at observing portents in the shape of strange sights and sounds or unusual births. Even in these terms, there were warnings of the eruption of Vesuvius. Earthquakes in themselves counted as portentous, and the historian Cassius Dio, writing over a century later, reports repeated sightings of giants roaming the land. This was a bad portent indeed, given that one standard explanation for the volcanoes of South Italy was that, when the gods defeated the rebellious giants and brought peace to the universe, they buried them beneath the mountains, and that is what their stirrings that caused the eruption. But while the ancient imaginations doubtless conjured up giants and plumes of gas from fumaroles, vents of which the volcanic gas escapes into the atmosphere, the earthquakes that Pliny describes so casually were more than just portents. Current thinking, however, had not yet caught up with their significance. We know this because, by an extraordinary coincidence, the philosopher Seneca, advisor to the Emperor Nero, wrote a discussion of the scientific causes of earthquakes only a few years before the eruption. Seneca's treatise on the causes of natural phenomena included an entire book on earthquakes, and at the time he was writing, the news was coming in freshly of the catastrophic earthquakes in Campania of AD 63, which caused extensive damage to both Pompeii and Herculaneum. Seneca writes that he regarded it as likely that earthquakes in the different parts of the world were interconnected, and even that they were linked to stormy weather, but he draws no link with volcanic activity. Indeed, he goes so far as to reproach the landowners who were deserting Campania for fear of further earthquakes. Response to earthquakes. The earthquake of AD 63 caused extensive damage to both Pompeii and Herculaneum, as we can see from the repairs made to the buildings. Some areas seem to have been worse affected than others. There were cases where entire houses were demolished and reduced to agricultural land. Upper floors would have been particularly badly affected, and indeed some buildings do have blocked up doors at the top, indicating that the higher floors have been abandoned. But more impressive than the signs of the damage are the signs of the resilience of the local population. Damaged houses were being extensively repaired and redecorated at the time of the AD 79 eruption, and there was a comprehensive program of reconstructing of public buildings in the Forum of Pompeii. The evidence points to a continuous process of repairs and rebuilding from AD 63 onwards. It used to be assumed that the earthquake described by Seneca was the only cause of damage, and that signs of incomplete work suggested that it took the cities a long time to recover from the first catastrophe. But we now know from volcanological research that a series of seismic episodes immediately preceded the eruption, causing further damage to structures that had already been repaired. So in the House of Cast Lovers of Pompeii, archaeologists discovered that the oven of a bakery had suffered major cracking. It had been repaired and plastered over, but had then been damaged again, and building work was already in progress to mend this new damage. In the same block, three cesspits in the street, which linked to latrines in the houses, had been dug out immediately before the eruption, presumably to restore them to full functionality. Outside in the main street, an open trench was found, cutting the entire length of the walkway as far as a water tower at the crossroads. Seismic activity had interrupted the water supply, but people had been hard at work repairing it. A frequent sight in the evacuated houses of Pompeii is that the heaps of plaster, which must have been brought in ready for new decorations, sometimes even in the pots and compasses of the decorators in position. The Pompeians in August 79, far from abandoning their city or fretting about earthquakes as portents of future destruction, were thus tenaciously repairing their city and trying to carry on with life as usual. There was every reason to. The economy of the bay was booming, with the great port of Puteoli as one of the biggest nodes of Mediterranean trade, and the holiday villas of the rich bringing constant investment. The eruption. Taken unawares by the eruption, the population of the towns and villas that circled the bay could only respond with panic. Pliny depicts his uncle as a model of stoic fortitude, calmly sailing directly into the danger zone, where he subsequently died, and taking a bath, dinner, and sleep while the catastrophe unfolded. But all around him is panic. Rectina in her villa, Pomponius in his. The young Pliny, too, stays calm, but his mother weeps and implores, and by the time they set out to flee northwards, a dense black cloud of ash has blotted out the light, and the crowds of screaming people fleeing around them in terror. The skeletons found in Pompeii and Herculaneum give us an equally eloquent testimony of panic and uncertainty. The eruption lasted for more than 24 hours, from its start on the morning of 24 August. Those who fled at once, unburdened by possessions, had a chance of survival, for the rain of ash and pumice mixed with lithics that descended for several hours was not necessarily lethal. It is clear that many, like the elder Pliny, thought their best chance was to take shelter and weather the storm. It was not until around midnight that the first pyroclastic surges and flows occurred, caused by the progressive collapse of the eruptive column, and these meant certain death for the people of the region. A pyroclastic flow is a ground-hugging avalanche of hot ash, pumice, rock fragments, and volcanic gas, which rushes down the side of a volcano as fast as 100 kilometers per hour or more. The hundreds of refugees sheltering in the vaulted arcades at the seaside of the Herculaneum, clutching their jewelry and money, met their end swiftly from this intense heat of the first surge that reached the city. Subsequent waves reached Pompeii, asphyxiating those who had survived the fall of 3 meters of pumice, were fleeing across the open in the dark or hiding beneath roofs. The waves that followed smashed flat the upper floors of houses and left the corpses encased in successive blankets of gaseous surge and pumice fall. It is impossible to tell what proportion of the inhabitants died, but the Romans were accustomed to losses mounting to tens of thousands in battle, and even they regarded this catastrophe as exceptional. The corpses found by archaeologists in Pompeii or Herculaneum should be regarded as only a small sample. The destruction encompassed the entire landscape south of Vesuvius to the Sorrentine Peninsula, as many died in the countryside or at sea as in these cities, even as far north as Misenum. The ash lay deep in drifts. After the eruption. The effect of the eruption was evidently totally traumatic, as is shown by the failure to reoccupy the sites of the cities destroyed. It was normal practice to rebuild the cities of this region after even the most massive earthquakes, but neither Herculaneum nor Pompeii were reoccupied. Instead, the site of Pompeii was riddled with tunnels by explorers, not by modern explorers as is often imagined, but by the Romans themselves after the eruption. Room after room of the city's buildings had holes hacked through the walls by tunnelers, and through Pompeii has richer finds than any other Roman site. It is a city already extensively sacked by looters. The cities on the north of the bay swiftly recovered, and Puteoli continued to be a significant commercial center. The Bay of Naples continued to attract rich holiday makers, but never again regained the massive levels of popularity of the 2 centuries before the disaster, the time when it had been the playground of many rich senators and emperors. It was not until the 18th century, when Naples flourished under the Bourbon kings, that the villas of the rich courtiers and ambassadors of that time brought a new flowering to the region. It was at this period that the aristocrats of Europe, as they progressed on their grand tours, made the Bay of Naples and its hidden Roman treasures a focal international fascination.